Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Hi there. Thanks for joining me. On this show, we will be finding our voices and speaking up. Gone are the days of passively watching life unfold before your eyes. A silent bystander in your own story. It's time to communicate in a kind but direct way. What you want, what you need, and what you desire. Whether you're afraid to rock the boat or worried that you won't be able to control the volume once you get started, there is a positive and healthy alternative for you. If Encouragementology has opened your eyes to anything, it's that you have the power to change what isn't working. First, you have to understand it isn't working. Then, you need to be willing to change your perspective and take action. Are you ready to turn up the volume? Now, we've all heard things like, use your inside voice. Speak up, I can't hear you. Well, maybe I haven't heard that. Do you know how to whisper? Be direct. Say what you mean. There seems to be numerous ways and lots of rules when it comes to using your voice. You're never going to get it 100% right. And really, who wrote the rules? As children, we find our voices when we first learn to speak, and no becomes our first declaration of independence. No, no, no. As we grow and become more curious than obstinate, it turns to why. Why? Thank goodness during natural development, our vocabulary expands to allow us to adequately express ourselves in every situation. But do we? The way others respond to us directly impacts our level of confidence and in turn dictates our volume and frequency. As a child, if you're told to shut up, your opinion doesn't matter, you might find it hard to speak up and share your thoughts and ideas. If you're told you're stupid, lack creativity, and need to stick to what you know best, then you may not be confident enough to take a risk and step outside of your comfort zone. What happens if you don't communicate your wants, needs, and desires to those you love? You don't get them. No one is a mind reader, and some of it should be common sense, but you can't rely on everyone's ability to do the kindest and most responsible thing. Sometimes it takes you leading the way. What about communicating fears, challenges, and boundaries? Same thing goes. It takes you finding your voice, speaking up, and realizing people treat you how they want unless you show them how you want to be treated. Kit Stone wrote an article for Rewire called Communicating Your Needs Isn't Selfish, It's Selfless. Imagine you're sitting at the doctor's office waiting to be seen. The nurse calls your name and shows you into the examination room. After checking your vitals, the nurse asks what brought you in today. If you say you're in for a routine checkup, the doctor will probably cruise your vitals and if nothing alarming stands out, send you on your way. But if you tell the doctor that you've been suffering from migraines for the last 2 weeks, the doctor will probably take a different approach to your examination. What you communicate to the doctor is essential in how the doctor cares for you. That's how you should think about communicating all your needs. You might think expressing your needs to others makes you selfish and self-centered. Considering the other person's feelings and always putting their needs ahead of your own shows that you care. But you would be wrong. Open communication is selfless because you're telling your spouse, partner, sibling, etc., the problems you are having and how they can help you. Life coach and mental health speaker Alexis Graff said, "In any relationship, expectations need to be communicated. High expectations without communication will just bring hardship into the relationship." Communicating your needs is one of the most important ways to care for yourself, says marriage and family therapist Jory Rose. And self-care is not selfish, but it can be difficult. What stops people from speaking their heart is a fear of how they will be perceived, how well it will be received by the other person, along with not knowing whether or not change will actually come. In some relationships, communicating what you need can even cause strain on the relationship. If the other person isn't able to hear you or create the change you're asking for. So, why you should ask for what you need? Well, time for another metaphor. Let's say you're going to build a bookshelf. You open the box and you find there are no instructions. Yes, you have a few tools and screws and you're not sure what goes where. Two people sitting at their kitchen table looking at each other. Communicating what you need will help you get it. But it also provides important information to help the other person be a better partner, friend, sibling, parent, what have you. You build the bookshelf to the best of your ability. Once the bookshelf is complete, it looks good, but it's a little off balance. All the books are sliding to one side. Although you know what a bookshelf should look like, you didn't have all the information to build this one properly. It's assembled, but it's not right, and it's always threatening to collapse. That's what a lack of communication can do to a relationship. If you don't give your partner information on how you need to be cared for, you place unrealistic expectations on them to help you assemble a sturdy relationship. Your relationship may appear stable, but it'll be off balance with too much weight in the form of unmet needs and unresolved hurts. The ability to ask for what you want is an essential skill, transitional life strategist Randy Levin says. Asking is a game changer because it eliminates assumptions while promoting authentic communication. Asking enables acceptance and buy-in. And when we don't ask, the answer is always no, which leaves us feeling unheard and unimportant. Clear communication isn't about getting your way. It's about growing a relationship rooted in respect and communication that reflects the needs of everyone involved. Some people have more experience communicating their needs than others. To get into this type of conversation, Rose suggests a four-step process of naming what you need and asking for how to remedy your emotions that doesn't attack or place blame and allows you room to speak from your heart. Number one, describe your observations. Explain what the situation looks like from your point of view. For example, I notice that whenever I start to talk, you stare at your phone. You're just stating what you see. Number two, name how the situation makes you feel. Let the other person know how their actions make you feel, like when you stare at your phone while I'm talking, it makes me feel unimportant. I statements are key to avoid placing blame and keep tensions down. Number three, state what you need. Here's where you tell the person what they can do to address your emotion. When I feel unimportant, I need eye contact or a head nod that acknowledges that you hear me and are paying attention. Number four, make a specific request. Be straightforward and make a suggestion that could help prevent the scenario from happening again. For example, can you please put down your phone while we talk? Another rundown of the four steps looks like this. I've noticed that when I get home from work, you and your friends are crowded around the television watching sports. When you have friends over without letting me know ahead of time, it makes me feel devalued. When I feel devalued, I need you to include me in decisions about guests so I know that you care about my feelings. So can you please let me know when you'd like to have company over? This strategy isn't reserved only for romantic relationships. It can work with friends, family members, or anyone else that you want to improve communication with. If the conversation is successful, it'll actually benefit you and the other person in the long run. When done with the right intention and execution, communicating your needs can serve to benefit both people and bring the relationship closer together, Rose says. Without clear and effective communication, the other person doesn't have the chance to get to know you better, nor do you have the chance to understand them in a deeper way. Open communication is similar to saying, "Help me help you." No one is a mind reader, and getting stuck in assumptions never has positive outcomes. If you can give someone what they need, there's a better chance that they'll be able to give you what you need in return. In order to do that, they need to know what you need. So open up and make sure that people in your life know what you need to be your best emotional self. Creating healthy boundaries can be hard enough. Knowing you need to make a change in your life and then be willing to let go, move on, distance, or eliminate can be life-changing. But when you don't clearly communicate your wishes, it can be futile. Just having a need to create a boundary means you have too much time allowing others to influence your decision, take advantage, or cause you to weaken your moral stance. Making a radical and much-needed switch isn't usually met with 100% compliance and well wishes. Your boundary and newfound voice could disrupt someone else's comforting routine, and they won't like that. So be prepared to be met with opposition and manipulation. You say that, but I'm sure you will give in a week or two. Start by taking yourself seriously. If you believe you deserve better treatment, truly believe it, then it'll be easier to communicate it. Lead by example. It's not just who has the loudest and most demanding voice. It's who demonstrates the change in their daily lives. When in doubt, turn the cheek and walk away. Your boundaries are personal, and some will be so invested in your success that they will gladly participate, and some will not. You won't convince everyone, and in the end, that's not necessary. You deserve these boundaries to nurture yourself. They're important, and you are worth it. Now you may think, geez, have I become passive or even silent because I need better boundaries in my life? Boundaries that keep me safe and give me the ability to operate as myself? Why, yes, you do. So I found a good evaluation in Boundary Setting and Healthy Communication from the Georgia Way. Knowing yourself, your values, your needs, and your wants is important. And so is protecting yourself. Boundary setting is not just about guarding yourself physically, but also mentally. Setting boundaries means being able to communicate with others about how you would and would not like to be treated, and protecting values that are important to you. Boundary setting shows respect for yourself and healthy assertiveness to others. It's important for you to know and believe that you're worth defending. Boundary setting can be used across a spectrum of situations, from refusing to answer questions that make you feel uncomfortable to avoiding life-threatening situations. Here are some examples of healthy and unhealthy boundaries. So first, here are some examples of healthy boundaries. Appropriate trust, moving step by step into intimacy, emotionally and physically. Staying focused on your own growth. Maintaining personal values despite what others want. Noticing and speaking up when someone invades your boundaries. Trusting your own decisions. Knowing who you are and what you want. Self-respect, not putting too much hope in someone else. Recognizing that friends and families are not mind readers. Not allowing someone to take advantage of you and your generosity. Saying no to food, gifts, touch, and sex that you do not want. Here are some examples of unhealthy boundaries. Trusting no one or trusting everyone. Letting others define you, direct you, and or describe your reality. Going against personal values or rights to please another person. Allowing someone to take as much as they want from you. Falling in love with someone who reaches out or with a new acquaintance. Telling all and talking at an intimate level at the first meeting. Expecting others to fulfill your needs. Believing others can anticipate your needs. Being sexual for your partner, not for yourself. Sexual and physical abuse. The first step in boundary setting is to name your limits. You need to identify your physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual limits, not just in romantic relationships, but in all interpersonal relationships. Your feelings and intuition can help guide these limits. Being self-aware helps you honor your values, feelings, and self. The next step is to be direct with others and develop a habit of healthy communication. Assertiveness is often seen as a negative trait. However, being assertive means confidently and firmly telling others your boundaries and communicating with them you expect respect. Seeking support of a friend, family member, counselor, coach, or church group can help you develop strong boundaries, good communication skills, and an accountability system. Communication skills can make or break human relationships. Without knowing how to engage in healthy communication, you open yourself up to increased stress and further challenges that can compromise your relationships with others. Quality communication relies heavily on listening skills. If you or the person you're communicating with are not actively listening, there is no real understanding, no basis for growing together, no mutuality, and no acceptance. Effective communication is a learned skill and the foundation upon which all else in a relationship is built. To improve your communication skills as well as your relationship, practice these tips. Listen without countering. I know how difficult that is, but actively try to hear the other person's point of view. Stop planning what you're going to do or say next and just tune in. Also, don't be defensive. Make eye contact. This shows that you're engaged and respectful of the person speaking. It also demonstrates confidence in yourself. Speak for yourself. Make I statements about what you feel and need. You cannot speak for the motivations behind others' actions and language. You can only describe how their actions make you feel. I feel, not you make me feel. See? State and restate what you've heard. Seek clarification. This prevents miscommunication and shows the other person you are actively listening. Stick to the subject. Whew, how many times do we go in the ditch? Make your point without making accusations. Provide examples or details to support your point. Again, you can only state your interpretation of the event. Remember not to speak on another's behalf. Look inside yourself. What is the motive behind the words you choose to say? To defend, provoke, distract, or to really communicate. Ask for behavioral change. Bring the conversation back to your everyday life. What will be different after this discussion? What can be expected? Remember your partner's trigger points and don't use them against them. Remember your own trigger points. Then resist the temptation to react. Agree to disagree sometimes. Practice respectful acceptance of differences. Remember the power of apology. If you know you've been hurtful or wrong, just say I'm sorry. Be clear and firm when communicating your boundaries. Be direct and say what you need to ensure there is no miscommunication. If someone persists, repeat your stance and intensify your volume only when needed. Communicate with confidence. Couldn't we all learn and relearn good communication techniques? It seems like so many advancements are actually taking us in a different direction, not bringing us closer together or more understood, but further apart, confused, and in most cases, misunderstood. We have multiple communication devices at our fingertips for the better part of a day, but can't seem to get our point across or our true feelings understood. We make quick judgments and we move on to the next person. We shorten our response to just logistical responses and never get past a shallow intent. What is happening to us as a society from not being able to adequately communicate our feelings? It's as if we've been given a global coloring book and asked to stay between the lines. There is article after article strongly communicating opinions and asking you to join their march or hunt. Social media has given a soapbox to anyone who can type a post, and texting has replaced the need to look someone in the eye to get your point across. Is your voice getting lost in a sea of overtalkers and overthinkers? We are floating in the shallow end of sharing, unable to plunge through the surface and go deeper. But that's where we find true connection with other people. When we can truly share, encourage, lean on, support, and celebrate. This is tough to do when your free time is spent catching up on your newsfeed and the 50 random birthday wishes you need to make. We stay floating, getting further away from the horizon. I found this article by Melissa Niles. She wrote the article entitled, "Technology is Destroying the Quality of Human Interaction." Now, what I find interesting and a little sad is that this article was written in 2012. Here we are 8 years later, and instead of moving in the right direction, we've created even more and faster avenues for the same behaviors. What's it going to take before we realize losing human connections means we're losing humanity? I had a terrible nightmare the other night. Instead of meeting for a quick cup of coffee, my friend and I spent 30 minutes texting back and forth about our day. After that, instead of going in to talk to my professor during his office hours, I emailed him from home with my question. Because of this, he never got to know who I was, even though he would have been a great source for a letter of recommendation if he had. I ignored a cute guy at the bus stop asking me the time because I was busy responding to a text. And I spent far too much time on Facebook trying to catch up with my 1,000-plus friends, most of whom I rarely see, and whose meaning sadly seems to dispel even more as the sheer number of connections I make grows. Do you identify with Melissa on that scenario? Oh, and wait, that wasn't a dream. This technological detachment is becoming today's reality. Little by little, internet and mobile technology seems to be subtly destroying the meaningfulness of interactions we have with others, disconnecting us from the world around us and leading to an imminent sense of isolation in today's society. Instead of spending time in person with friends, We just call, text, or instant message them. It may seem simpler, but we ultimately end up seeing our friends face-to-face less and less. 10 texts can't even begin to equal an hour spent chatting with a friend over lunch. And a smiley face emoticon? It's cute, but it could never replace the ear-splitting grin and smiling eyes of one of your best friends. FaceTime is important, people. We need to see each other. This doesn't just apply to our friends. It applies to the world around us. It should come as no surprise that face-to-face interaction is proven by studies to comfort us and provide us with some important sense of well-being, whether it's with friends or family or even cashiers in the checkout line. There's something intangibly real and valuable about talking with someone face-to-face. This is significant for friends, partners, potential employers, and other reoccurring people that make up your everyday world. That person becomes an important existing human connection, not just someone whose disembodied text voice pops up on your cell phone, iPad, or computer screen. It seems we have more extended connections than ever before in this digital world, which can be great for networking if it's used right. The sad fact of the matter is that most of us don't. It's too hard to keep up with 1,000 friends, let alone 200. At that point, do we even remember their names? We need to start prizing the meaning of quality in our connections, not sheer quantity. One of my best friends from my hometown has 2,241 Facebook friends. Sure, her posts get a ton of feedback, but when I asked her about the quality of those relationships, she said to me that she really has a few friends that she can trust and spend time with happily. Using a strange conundrum like this is a constructive example. We should consider pruning our rampant online connections at the very least. Past evolutionary psychology research by British anthropologist and psychologist Robin Dunbar has revealed that people are actually limited to a certain number of stable, supportive connections with others in their social network, roughly 150. Furthermore, recent follow-up research by Cornell University's Bruno Concalves used Twitter data to show that despite the current ability to connect with a vast amount of people via the internet, a person can still only truly maintain a friendship with a maximum of 100 to 200 real friends in their social network. While technology has allowed us some means of social connection that we would never be able to do before, it's allowed us to maintain long-distance friendships that would have otherwise fallen by the wayside. The fact remains, though, that it's causing ourselves to spread too thin, as well as slowly ruining the quality of social interaction that we all need as human beings. So finding your voice can look different for different people. Not everyone struggles with asserting themselves and communicating their ideas. Not everyone is in need of a healthier boundary. Not everyone struggles with self-confidence. Not everyone relies on social media or technology to keep them connected. But everyone can identify with a need to communicate your wants, needs, desires, challenges, and fears in a healthy and nurturing way. You can go with the flow, not making waves, or you can flap your arms and swim. It's your choice. Still need to find your voice? Well, Kathy Caprino gives us 5 steps to speaking up powerfully when you feel like you can't. Number 1. Examine what you learned in your childhood. If you struggle at all with speaking up, take some time this week and examine closely what you learned in your childhood about a safe way to speak up for yourself. Ask yourself, what do I remember about how it went when I said to my authority figures, "No, I don't agree with you," or "Don't do that to me"? If you're in touch with yourself, you'll most likely remember some very pivotal emotional moments. Maybe it went well. Maybe it went terribly. Sit with it and think about what you learned about speaking up and how you were treated when you tried to assert or defend your boundaries. Number two, get very clear about what you need to say and have that conversation. Decide on the one most important thing you need to say this month and to whom, and then plan for it. Start with the one person who is violating your boundaries most or disrespecting you and it needs to stop. What do you need to say no to today? Start by committing to have the most pivotal conversation you need to have. But before you do, realize that the process of building your own boundaries and learning to speak up for yourself can perturb the system, meaning others can and will get upset by this because they're used to walking all over you. So before you do this, get very clear about what you want to say and manage your emotions as best as you can. Offer clear examples of the turnaround behavior you need and share that with compassion, gentleness, and respect. Number three, be the highest version of yourself when you communicate. What happens to most of us in very tough interpersonal situations is that, unfortunately, we become incredibly stressed, defensive, or angry. And when we're flooded with emotion, our clarity and balance fly out the window. Someone once wrote, "You can say anything when you say it with love in your heart." That's great truth. Say what needs to be said, but don't do it from a frail defensive ego or with harshness, but with strength and compassion. Be the highest version of yourself. Rise above any pettiness, egotism, and oversensitivity to be the best you can be when you're having these powerful conversations, and it will go much better for both parties. That brings us to number four, understand the ecosystem and the individual you're dealing with. Before you communicate and speak up for yourself, you need to understand exactly who and what you're dealing with and make your plans accordingly. Also, assess clearly the personality and behavior of this individual. Are they irrational or rational? Can they be reasoned with, or can a compromise be reached? Is there a power dynamic that you have to navigate effectively through? For example, if you're dealing with an individual with a narcissistic personality disorder, you need to speak up very differently than you would with a healthy, high-functioning individual. Directly challenging a narcissist usually ends very badly for the challenger. You also have to understand the ecosystem, whether it's your family or workplace or another system. Before you speak up powerfully, understand what you're dealing with and formulate the best plan you can so that you can be heard and understood in the deepest way possible, but also get what you need. Number five, prepare for the consequences. Many people resist speaking up for themselves because they dislike angering others. Thousands of parents aren't as authoritative as they need to be in their parenting for this exact reason. They don't want their kids to be mad at them. The same is true for managers, so they let problems continue without effectively addressing them. But those fears make us weak and ineffective in our roles. And serious damage can be done if we're not taking on the challenges of our lives in empowered, straightforward ways. If you're striving every minute to make everyone else happy, then you're not making yourself happy and you're not saying and doing what needs to be done to live a successful, fulfilling life. If you feel compelled every day to do more than is necessary, appropriate, and healthy to get an A+ in all of it, you're suffering from perfectionist overfunctioning, and it's damaging to your life. If you overfunction, then you ensure that others around you will underfunction and avoid doing their share. In short, You can't be strong and empowered and also ensure that everyone is pleased with you every minute of the day. Part of speaking up for yourself is accepting that there will be consequences. Prepare for them. Understand what may come back your way when you speak your truth and be ready for that. If that's too challenging on your own, find a great mentor, sponsor, therapist, coach, advocate to support you through this life-affirming process. I hope you've been able to see that no matter what you have to say, you have the power to find your voice and to speak up. You're important. You deserve to be heard. If you want to share Encouragementology with a friend who needs to know they are not alone in this journey of self-discovery, you can visit encouragementology.com or anywhere you stream your content to receive this episode and all others. Follow us on Facebook for additional encouragement throughout the week. So I challenge you, find the courage to speak up so you can honor your own boundaries, clarify what is not acceptable to you, and start living a happier, healthier, and more empowered life. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges.
I stumbled through until the path was clear. That's when I found you, how I wound up here.